Okay, good morning. Good to see you. We're going to get started. This morning, our learning is sponsored by Lenny and Lois Breathman in memory of Lois, its father, Mortimer Brooks, Mordechai ben Yaakov, Alav Shalom, and also by Avi and Ellen Freilich in memory of Avi's father, Rabbi Isaac Freilich, Rabbi Yitzchak David ben Avram Yaakov, Alav Shalom, and Mark and Lois Weintraub in memory of Mark's mother, Mildred Weintraub, Mildred Batzvi Mordechai, Alav Shalom, and Neshama and Havaliot. Our learnings in a memory, may the memory continue to be a blessing. So, we're on Tet Vav today. It is a relatively short daf as you look onto the second side. It's only a few lines, and by the time we get into the green, it's essentially a new subject. So we're going to have to essentially leave that. For next time, we'll just give it some rough introductory notes. So we're getting up to the dark blue, halfway down Ahmed Bet. So let's review, and there are four conceptual notes to introduce the daf, some of which will be familiar, I'm sure, just to set the tone so we don't have to get tangled on the way. So we're on the third daf of the third perek, which began with a Mishnah that listed a number of crimes for which you get lashes. Just says, Elo en Elokin, who the people get lashed, and it is not a list of names, friends, or enemies, but it's a list of potential crimes. And it is not an exhaustive list. So, of course, the Gemara and the commentators wonder, why does the Gemara give this particular list? It leaves all sorts of things on. What is included and what isn't? That's the opening of the Perek. And we had two Dapim so far. The first Dap tried to figure out, who does this follow, this Mishnah? Because it includes crimes for which you are Chayav Karis. So it must be that whoever also did this Mishnah think you can get both Malkus, physical lashes, and some sort of spiritual punishment at the same time. But it includes none for which you're also chayav misa. So no capital punishment and lashes together, but you can get kares and lashes together. So who is that? And the first stuff essentially says, oh, this is a view of Rabbi Akiva, the figure who again ended that first perek of ours and keeps reappearing throughout the context of this Masechta. Rabbi Akiva says, misa and malchus can never be together. They are radically different kinds of punishment, and you can't get two kinds of punishment for the same sin, at which point the Gemara says, well, how can you get Kares at the same time? And we had the Daf go back and forth as to how you might be able to get Kares at the same time as Malkus if you can't get two punishments. And it sounded like it might be, well, Kares is never really fully implemented because you can always do tshuva, so it wouldn't really be two full punishments. Alternatively, we read it as, well, they're not two distinct punishments. They both aim at rehabilitation. Misa does not, as we noted last time. There is no assumption that after Misa, you are going to be better because you are going to be deceased. The assumption is if you're Chayav Kares or Chayav Malkus, the weight of of Kares over you might lead you to do tshuva, and Malkus will leave you changed by the end of the process. It's not meant to maim you or harm you or be punitive in the sense that we just want to hurt you. This is meant to be fundamentally about changing your behavior in some fundamental way going forward. That was the first half. The second half last week was incredibly thorny and began by trying to assess the view of Rabbi Yitzchak, who was the third view in that Mishnah, who in the Braita. We said it's Rabbi Akiva who we follow. Rabbi Shmuel says you can get Mis and Malkus together. They're not a problem. How, anyone remember why he said you can get Mis and Malkus together?
It's an extension of Misa.
Right, it says Malkus is just Misa Arichta, meaning this is all a kind of corporal assault on you. Death is like the most extreme version, but Malkus is just like a miniature. We're just trying to hurt you. Death is the most extreme, and Malkus, it's all part of the same package, so it's not two different punishments. So for Rabbi Shmuel, Malkus does not seem to be about rehabilitation. We don't really care what happens next. This is about hurting you, and it's punitive. Again, that's not suggesting it's sadistic and that we enjoy hurting you, but we are less concerned with what this is going to do for you long term and more concerned about reparation over what you've done. That was Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Yitzchak says you can't get Kares and Malkus at the same time either. They're fundamentally different, which opened the wormhole to, hold on a minute, how does Rabbi Yitzchak know you can't get Kares with Malkus? And he says it's not a logic, it's based on a pasuk, which one said, oh, that's a good point, what do the rabbis do with that pasuk? And we ended up in the meat market of Itlis, where some people said to Rabbi Akiva, what happens if somebody has an intimate sexual relationship with somebody who is both their sister, their father's sister, and their mother's sister? Which one he didn't say, you know, I'm trying to cater my child's wedding here. Maybe you could ask me another time. He said, oh, good question. And I hadn't heard that exact case, but I've heard if somebody had an intimate relationship with five different nidot, he gets punished for all five. So presumably it should be the same thing. And we had back and forth, and we went over to the next stuff. And essentially it comes down that Rabbi Yitzchak and the rabbis agree on everything apart from two things, which is Karis and Malkus together. Rabbi Yitzchak says you can get it, and the rabbis say you can't. And the final view is that Nida only applies if it is the natural flow of blood. That would be the view of the rabbis. Rabbi Yitzchak disagrees with that. But otherwise we had like a collage of different verses back and forth for selecting what they follow. Then at the halfway through the daf, we shifted topics to the second category of prohibitions that appear in our Mishnah. The first category is improper relations, whether it's with a family member or somebody who's married. That's the first list in the Mishnah. And then it said, and anyone who goes into the Bet Mikdash while they're impure or eats kodshim while they're impure, get lashes. And we said, well, how do I know there's a warning for that? Which opened up our discussion of why it's necessary in halachic literature, not just for the verse to say, if you do this, you get hit. You would not get hit if that's all it said. You have to have a warning somewhere else that said, this is prohibited. And then elsewhere it says, and if you do it, this is the punishment. And the example we gave last week is the difference between a parking pass and a parking ticket. What difference does it make? I put my car here, and either way, I'm paying money to be here. So I mentioned, I know people who go to the Heights and like impossible to find parking. They say, I'm just going to park where I know I'm going to get a ticket. It's the equivalent of paying for parking in a lot. So I'll just pay the ticket. So what's the difference? And the assumption is, one's morally or legally non-ideal. So if you have an Azara, you're told, if you have this relationship, you can't just turn around and say, you know what, I've fallen in love with this woman. She's married to somebody else. So I'll get lashes. You know, it's worth it to me, to have this relationship. Nothing's wrong with it. That's just, if I do it, I get lashes, and I'm willing to take that. So we have Azara to say, no, it's not just the cost of doing business that if you do this, you get lashes. It's wrong. And the lashes is not just the repercussions. It is trying to change you so you don't do this again. So again, the thrust that seems to keep emerging is that Malkus is not just, you did something, this is the result, but this is a process that is meant to change you, to educate you, to stop you transgressing in this way. That was the end of last week's stuff, and now we pivot to today, which still picks up on this issue of walking into the Bet Mikdash while you're impure. So we're still responding to the Mishnah, but there are four issues we need to be aware of. The first is, there are exceptions where you don't get lashes, even though there is a warning, and there's an Azhara in the Torah, and it says that this is prohibited. There are a number of different exceptions, one of which is if there's no action involved. That's called a lav she'ein bo maaseh. There's no act involved. You can't get lashed for that. Also, if it's a lav she'nitak la'aseh, if it's a lav that is followed by a positive command, you did something wrong, you need to do this to remedy it, you don't get lashes. Now, this is the question we're going to begin the daf with. What happens if there is a positive command that will apply going forward, but there is a lav that follows or is involved? That's called a lav shekadmu aseh. And if that sounds abstract, I'll try to give a concrete example. Imagine you are a teacher in a, where kids naughty, middle school. So you're a teacher in middle school, and you say to the kids, everybody, I need you to stay in your seats. Everybody has to stay in their seats the whole time. And then in the middle, a kid gets up and wanders around. You say, please, come back to your seat. Sit down. So that was, is that a lav shenitak laaseh? I said, don't leave your seats. And then I said, come back. Have they like remedied the problem, or is it, oh, no, this is where you're meant to be, and you moved away, and you coming back isn't remedying the situation, that's just restoring order. And if I said, so would that be, they still need to have a punishment, or is the fact they've come back to their seat remedied the issue? That's the question. And could you see an argument that that has not remedied the issue? Right, you disobeyed. This doesn't remedy your disobedience. This is just restoring things the way they were. What could I say to them reasonably that would be a new positive command that might remedy? So you left your seat, you need to go and sit in that seat in the corner. You say, right, I've now given you an aseh, so I don't need to beat you now. I mean, let's go back 60 years where that would have in theory been a response. If I said, what did they used to call it? Do you used to call it caning here as well? Was that ever a thing here? Right, so that, I mean, that was a legal means of discipline in schools in the UK. You could, it was called caning?
No.
Oh. Was it legal, but they did it, or?
Gray area.
Gray area. Right, so in England, it was a legitimate, they had canes, and they would cane you. My grandfather used to often tell the story that he once went to, in the middle of class, he went to the bathroom for something, and he came back, and the whole class was lining up, getting caned in the hand, and he thought it must be something we all did, so he just got in line and got hit on the hand, and it turned out they all were in trouble for copying his exam, and he got caned anyway. He was a bit upset about that. But it was like part of disciplinary rules. So imagine if I said, if anybody leaves their seat, you will get caned. That's radically different. If anybody leaves their seat, they have to come back to their seat. One is, you're meant to be here. That's a love shikadmu ase. Everybody has to be in their seat. And if you leave, am I still entitled to cane you if you come back to your seat? Yeah, I'm just saying come back. That's not like, oh, you left, now come back. You're just remedying the situation back to the state of order. But if I said, go and sit in that chair, that's an innovation where I'm saying, do this positively, and you could say that replaces punishment. So that's love shikadmu ase. And the discussion on this stuff is, do you get lashes? If the Torah said, do this, and then you did a violation and you restore order, do you still get lashes, or the fact that you restored order avoid that? So that's the conceptual introduction. There are going to be three prohibitions that come up in our discussion. One is going to be Habala Mikdash Tame. If somebody enters the temple impure, now there is an instruction similar to the classroom case, I guess. There is an obligation, if you are Tame, to leave the camp. So we know everybody has to be outside the camp if you're Tame. And if you go into the Bet, there's a prohibition, do not go into the Bet Mikdash. And if you do, you have to leave. So the question is, that instruction to leave, is that a Lav Shnitik La'aseh? Oh, I remedied it, I left. Or is that just, no, no, that's where you're meant to be, and you disobeyed and you violated and you need to be punished. You leaving isn't an aseh that you're now remedying the situation, you're just restoring order. So that's going to be the case, which is going to be the test case for whether you get lashes in that situation. Another case that comes up, and you have to forgive some of the, I guess brutal might be the word, or less contemporary situations we'll be discussing. The second prohibition that will come up is a situation of rape of a young woman who is not married. And there is a punishment for this. If a man rapes a young woman who is not married, what is the punishment? Yeah, he has to marry her and pay the father a fine. I will add parenthetically, the marriage has to be consensual, meaning she has to agree that she wants this partnership. She may turn around. And when we use the word rape, well, I'm sure we conjure up, you know, law and order, horrific assault circumstances. It's also possible, and this is not a way of whitewashing the moment, but it's possible she would be interested in marrying him because she's too young to really consent. And when we call it rape, we don't mean that he like tied her down and like hurt her, but she's too young to consent. She's not really sure what's going on, and he abused her psychologically in involving her in this. But she might turn around and say, my life will be hugely better if I marry you right now than if I don't, because what's going to happen the rest of my life, I'm never going to find a match. No one's going to want to marry me because they'll know I was abused as a child, or that I'm sleep around, or whatever it is. So I want to be with you, and you know what, maybe I do grow an affection for you and I grow attached to you. I'm sure we're familiar with Stockholm Syndrome. Anyone familiar with Stockholm Syndrome? The only reason I am is from actually a James Bond movie from about like 15 years ago. What was it called? The Day After Tomorrow or something? Where somebody falls in love with the villain who captures her. Where people can get bonds of affection to people who have harmed them because they feel a closeness. And I'm not suggesting, again, we should embrace that psychosis rather than treat it. But there are circumstances under which she would want that. So if somebody, so if there was a lighter term than rape, I would want to use it, but I don't know another word that could function as a synonym. But this is a man who forces himself on a young woman, and there is a command that if she wants to, he has to marry her. And he can never, ever divorce her. Now the question is, if he divorces her, what does he have to do? He has to marry again, he has to remarry her. So he could like do a get and then he has to remarry. Oh, and parenthetically, I should note, next Sunday, is a Yom HaKahal for YU, for REITs rather, where they're having a day-long learning in Meadowlands. And it's on the subject of Gittin, that's why I remember this, because that's what they're doing in the yeshiva this year. And they're going to show what a get would look like in practice. They're not actually going to perform a real divorce, but they're going to have a get that's written that you can see and show you how it would work. And they're going to lots of shirim all day. And I encourage everybody who have time to carve time out for that and go there. If this shir is what stops you from going, let me know, and we'll figure out a resolution to that. If not, enjoy the bagels. If he divorces her, he has to remarry. And the question is going to be, is that a lav hanidik la'aseh? Meaning I'm prohibited from divorcing her, but now I'm remarrying her, so I don't get lashes. We're saying, no, that's a kad mo'aseh. You're meant to be married to her. And the fact that you have to take her back, that doesn't exempt you from punishment. You're just restoring order, and you disobeyed by divorcing her. Or is this a lav shenitek la'aseh? That's going to be the central question, and we're going to compare it to a third prohibition. And again, we're just clarifying for the sake before we introduce. We're familiar with motzi shemra. Motzi shemra is when, and for some reason, the Gemara is going to entertain that this case of ones or rape is essentially equivalent to motzi shemra in many ways, and they can be compared. Motzi shemra is a man is engaged to a young woman. After they're engaged, they then get married, and he claims after they're married, during their engagement period, she had a relationship with somebody else. She committed adultery. So we were betrothed, she committed adultery, we're now married. And again, he says, how do I know she committed adultery? Because of the relationship we're now having, I've now been exposed to her condition, and I realize that she's been adulterous. Turns out that's not true. How on earth the Beit Din finds that out? There are different ways, but there's an assumption they can find this out. They discovered the bed sheets of their first night together, and they realized that she was clearly in a virginal state when they first had a relationship. So he's just lied, meaning it was not her condition. It was her cooking he didn't like. And a week later, he says, oh my God, she's a terrible cook. How am I going to get out of this? He said, oh, I'll say that she had adultery. That's called motzi shemra. That's called putting a bad name on somebody that is false. You've now tarnished her. And in many ways, this is now, you have ruined the rest of her life. Who's going to marry her again now that you've said that she commits adultery? So what you've done in both these cases, whether it's ones, meaning you've raped somebody, or you've put a bad name on them, it's not quite the assault that you've done to her that you're being punished for. And that's not to say it's not worthy of punishment. That's to say that's not what's being addressed when you're paying a fine or you're forced to marry her. That is to address the situation for the rest of their life. There are many things in religious life for which you are not punished that are deeply heinous. And the assumption is if you rape somebody and you harm them, they can sue you in court for damages. They can sue you in court for shame. They can sue you in court for physical harm, for medical expenses, and all the other interpersonal harms that's not related to paying the father and marrying her. That's about what now her condition is for the rest of her life. No one's going to marry her. So how do you remedy that? You give the father money so he can, have a dowry when he goes to somebody else to persuade them, or you marry her to obfuscate the issue. And Motzi Shemra, you have to stay married to her if she wants to. So it's the same situation. You've ruined her prospects for the rest of her life. You have to marry, pay her parents, and you have to stay married to her. Again, that's not because what you've done is now resolved, but the future is now covered for her going forward. So that's Motzi Shemra. We've spoken about Ones, we've spoken about going to the Beit Mikdash, and we've spoken about this preemptive Ase. So now that we've established those things, let's begin the Daf. Top of Tet Vav Amud Aleph. I will read for you the bottom of the previous daf because it's just one line on the previous daf, and I didn't want to print the whole sheet out just for that. It begins, Amar Rabba Baba Chanan Rabbi Yochanan. So we've now gotten the name of Rabbi Yochanan. He says, Kol lo ta'aseh shekad mu'aseh, any prohibition that has an aseh before it, lo kin alav, you get whipped. That's all we need from, oh, Lord above. That's all we need from the bottom of the previous daf. Rabbi Yochanan takes a view. If I said to everybody in class, nobody leave, that everybody has to sit in their seat. Everybody sit in their seat. And then they left. Somebody got up and I said, come back to your seat right now. Come and sit in your seat right now. And then they came back to their seat. And I said to them, did you ever get lines as a kid? Was that a punishment to write lines? Yeah? There you go. Moshe got it a few times. Say again?
You had a lot of punishments in England.
What happened here? Everyone just listened?
They made you write
things. Right. I once had to write 500 lines on... I was told once to write 500 lines on the inside of a ping pong ball, which I thought, how do you write that small? And they said, no, I need you to write about the contents of a ping pong ball in 500 lines. Right. Oh, you had to write a blot? Oh, that was a Jewish teacher, I guess. It was my science teacher that I got in trouble for. It was awful. Yeah, and Moshe had tactics. We developed tactics. Is it easier to write each word, I, or do you write a sentence then a sentence? It was horrible either way. Obviously, now we would just write one sentence, scan it, and then print it, make it look real, and send it in. Copy, paste. And there were occasions where I had my parents get me out of it, but it was dreadful. Either way, so if I said, everybody, you must stay in your seat, and then somebody left, and I said, right, come back to your seat right now, and they sat down, and I said, and tonight, you're writing lines. Could they turn around and say, but I just came back to my seat, I remedied the situation. Or am I saying, no, you have not remedied the situation, you shouldn't have left, you're now back where you should be, and you need to write lines. And Rabbi Yochanan says, yes. Discipline is fitting in a case when there was an initial instruction that was then disobeyed. That's what he says. Amru lo, top of the page. They said to him, they said, hold on a minute, Rabbi Yochanan, we're not sure about this. Because if they did come back to their seat, meaning if they didn't come back, give them lines. I get that. But if they came back, the situation's remedied. Maybe. So they say, Amras, did you really say that, Rabbi Yochanan, that you get punished in addition to remedying the situation? Amr lo, and he said to them, lo, I never said that. He said, hold on a minute, you just literally said that. He said, no, I never said that. Which is read by the Gemara as, I've changed my mind. I no longer hold that view. If you follow the instruction afterwards, it's remedy. Amr Rabba responds, hello, Kim. My gosh, he says. Amra, you did say it, Uktiva v'tendina, and it's written in the Torah, and there's a Mishnah that teaches this. You can't wiggle out of this, Rabbi Yochanan. Ktiva, what does it say in the Torah? V'yishlechu ben ha-machaneh. If somebody's impure, it says you have to leave the camp, v'lo yitamu et machaneyim, and you're not allowed to go into the camp. And if you do go back into the camp, you have to leave. So this is a case where you're told, leave the camp, everybody go to your seats. Then somebody left and went into the Beit Mikdash, and we said, okay, everybody back, go back to your seat. That's a lav shekad mu'aseh. Tanina, and in our Mishnah, when we said who gets whipped, it says, Habala Mikdash Tameh, someone who goes into the Mikdash Tameh. So you'd still get whipped, even though there is a remedy, leave right now. We say that that's a cardinal asse. That's just restoring order. So you still get lashes. Elamai Tamaka Mahadabay. So it sounds like the Mishnah does feel that way, and it sounds like the Torah feels that way, and Rabbi Yochanan is in line with the Mishnah. But Rabbi Yochanan says he changed his mind. Why did he change his mind? First one line is Tama. Mishum dekashalei ones, because he had a difficulty from the case of ones, where it seems to be you do not get lashes if you are in breach of this following rule. D'tanya it taught. Ones shigirish. If somebody had raped this young woman, they got married, he then divorced her, which is prohibited. He divorced her. Im Yisrael hu, if he's a Yisrael, he just remarries her and he doesn't get lashes. Which again, you can imagine from her perspective, she's just being kind of chattel back and forth. It's like, I raped you, now I have to marry you, and now I've divorced you, and in the meantime she's going, you know, could you just figure yourself out? And then we say, oh, you're not allowed to do this, it's fine, I'll marry her again. So he marries again, no lashes. And that sounds like it's the case of love shukad mu'aseh, where you had to marry her, you then divorced her, and you remarried her. And there are no lashes. Sounds like you've remedied the situation. Sounds like the kid who says, oh, but I came back to my seat, I shouldn't get lines. That excuse seems to work. Im Kohen Hu, but if the person who had to marry this, again, so you've got a priest who is not involved in the most upcoming behavior, priest rapes somebody, and we say, you have to marry this young lady, and you're not allowed to divorce her. And if he divorced her, what is he not allowed to do? He can't remarry her, because Kohen is not allowed to marry a divorcee. There is some more details to that, but that's in broad strokes. He can't remarry her, so he gets lashes. Meaning, it sounds like the remarrying is an equivalent to lashes. Because if you're a Kohen, you get lashes. If you're not a Kohen, you don't get lashes. Sounds like remarrying is a remedy. If you're a general common Yisrael, you have to remarry, you don't get lashes. This is surely a case where it's a cardinal asse. You had an instruction initially. Veloki, you should get lashes, full stop. So we've now got to clash that up between these two rules. We've got these two cases. If you go into the Bet Mikdash while you're Tamei, we say you have to leave. And Rabbi Yochanan says, you clearly get lashes. Even though you followed an instruction to remedy it, you left. You still get lashes because you were meant to be out the whole time. That wasn't your like, oh, go to the naughty corner outside the camp. You were meant to be outside the camp. And so you still get lashes. In the case of Ones, we say you're not allowed to divorce her. And you say, okay, I'll remarry her. We said, well, that's the same thing. You were meant to be married to her. You haven't remedied and done something new and say, right, I'll pay her more money. You're just restoring what the situation was. So you should still get lashes, but you don't. So we've now got, if you enter the Bet Mikdash when you're impure, you get lashes. If you divorce this poor lady, you don't get lashes. And they both seem to be Shekad Mu'ase. So what we're now going to have over the course of the daf is proving that the case of Ones is an exception. It looks like it's a cardinal asse, but we can have various proofs that show that actually remarrying her is not just restoring order, but it is a remedy to what has occurred. So if I said, come back to your seat, and they sat down in the case of the temple, saying that's just restoring order, but when it comes to marriage, I would be saying, like, come sit in this seat here. It's a different seat. So you're not coming back to where you were. There's something that's fundamentally changed. In the case of Ones, when you remarry, that's our assumption, and that's why you don't get malchus, because it is somehow remedial. Is that a question? Harvey had a question? No. Okay. So, Amar Ullah. Ullah's response, and the blue and the green are basically just inversions of each other, and the yellow is a confession that neither of them work, and then we'll end up at the bottom of the page. So Ullah says, oh, you want to know why Ones is an exception? Because of a pasuk. The pasuk tells me that when you remarry somebody who you've divorced, it's a radically different situation, and it is a remedy. Now, this is on the daf that you've got on the right-hand side. You've got the psukim right in the middle. It says, Torah or HaShalem. Everyone see that? It's very small type. Apologies. The bet, in the middle, that's the pasuk we're going to look at for a second. It says, V'natan ha'isha shochev ima. And the man who sleeps with her has to give la avi hanav chamishim kasev. You have to pay the father 50 kasev. This is if you rape somebody. She has to be for him as a wife. And because he abused her, he can never ever send her away. So let's say he divorces her. We now say, you have to marry her. She has to be for your wife. You have to remarry her. That's the verse. And on Gimel, we've got the case of Motzi Shemra. And it sounds almost exactly the same, this pasuk. Va'anshu oto. He is punished. Mea kasev, he has to give 100. V'natnu la avi ara, to the father. Ki otzi shemra al betulat Yisrael, because he put out a bad name on a young virgin. V'lo tia li'isha, and that same phrase appears. She shall be for him as a wife. Lo yuchal ashalcha yomav, he can never send her away. So now we have a verbal textual reason to compare these two cases. And the Gemara is going to assume the fact that it says lo tia li'isha, she shall be for him as a wife, you only really need it in one of these cases. They seem to be exactly parallel. You've cast aspersions on her name, she's never going to get married. You physically abused her, she's never going to get married. And it says, and you have to be of her wife. We're going to assume we could just learn from one to the other. You don't need Loti Ali Isha in both. So it must be that extra Loti Ali Isha is to teach you that this is a love shenitak la'ase, that it is a remedy after the fact, not just restoring order. That's going to be the assumption. What would you say intuitively if I said to you, which one is worse? Raping a young girl or casting aspersions on her name, what would you say is worse? And why? No one is going to be cancelled as a result of this. This is all hypothetical deception. Oh, one second.
This is on the way in. There's a door upstairs. We're having a share right now.
Come in anyway. So you can come through. You're looking for Minyan?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know which room. So which would you say is worse?
Rape.
Say again?
Rape.
Why would you say rape is worse?
Emotionally, the aspects of the physical.
So, I mean, the emotional aspects could exist with scarring her name. But you're saying that the emotional consequences of the physical act doesn't exist. So, right, rape you say is worse because you've physically done something to her. You didn't just say something, it's like bad reputation in the papers, but you physically harmed her. Why might you say, if you were to take the other side, devil's advocate, why might you say Mercy Shemra, spreading a bad name, is worse than rape?
That's an aspersion on her character.
Right, you might say the...
something sinful.
Right, you might say the emotional damage done by tarring her reputation is worse. Now, I'm, thank God, not in a position to adjudicate either of these. All I can say from my research, I guess, or reading or exposure to cases in the news is that if I would have thought that Motsi Shemra is not a big deal, like, so someone said something, you know, what do we always say as kids? Sticks and stones can break my bones, words don't hurt me. That's obviously not true. People testify all the time about when their reputations are damaged, and it's not true. How this scars and people can become suicidal. It's horrific when people just, things are said about them that aren't true. And certainly with adolescents, this is a major issue with social media now. When, what do they call it? Social media?
Cyberbullying.
When kids put up rumors on the internet that aren't true, you can do nothing physically to this person and make them essentially suicidal. This case, it was adjudicated a few years ago where there was a young lady who was given, I think, life in prison because she convinced her boyfriend to take his own life. Is this right? She texted him and said, just do it. And he took his life. And said, I didn't do anything. It's just a text. And her, to be, I don't know if I want to defend her. Her defense was, I had pity on him. He was suffering deeply. And his life was miserable, and he wanted to do this, and I was trying to help him have the courage to do what was for his good. So it wasn't like I wanted him dead, but either way, she was held liable for that. So there's a huge amount you can do when it doesn't involve physical behavior. That's all we're saying. So let's see which one is worse, because again, you've got, yeah.
Only the second one, which Motsi Shemra has the word onesh in it.
Okay, so this is where the Gemara actually falls to say why Motsi Shemra might be worse, is if you look at the psukim, when you initially commit the crime, so you rape this young lady, what's the punishment? Marry her and pay the father. Lashes? No lashes for the initial crime. The question will be, if you divorce her, you get lashes. But initially, there's no lashes. When it comes to Motsi Shemra, the initial punishment for the crime is you pay and you get lashes. So it seems like from the punishment, Motsi Shemra might be worse. That's what it seems like. But then we're going to say, but... and it's double the amount of money. So the punishment for the initial crime seems harsher in the case of Motsi Shemra. So we're not even going to get to the logic of maybe we could argue it's worse, but just you look at the punishment on the books. So let's go back and forth. Again, the premise of the next three colors is it says, she shall be to him as a wife in both of these cases, and they shouldn't really be necessary because we're going to suggest they're both the same. So there's a spare verse here saying, she shall beat him as a wife. That might be a lafa nitagla. I'll say that comes second. So Amar Ulla says, lo yama lo chale isha ba'ones. It shouldn't really have to say, she shall beat him as a wife in the case of rape. Viligma Motsi Shemra. They should just be able to learn from Motsi Shemra. Ma Motsi Shemra, I'm sorry if this blue is hard to see. Just as in Motsi Shemra, excuse me, shalo asa maser, he didn't do anything. And she has to marry him. That's the punishment. That's obviously not a helpful term. That's the consequence. He has to marry her, even though he didn't do anything. Amar Rachmana v'lo leji isha. And it says, lo tia leisha there. So onus or kosh again. So of course, if you... meaning, if you think Motsi Shemra is going to ruin her chances of getting married again, raping her is obviously going to ruin her chances and you have to marry her. So then, lama ne'ma, why does it say lo tia leisha in that case as well, in the case of onus? If it's not to tell you that's what you should do in the first instance, because that's obvious if you've raped her, you have to marry her. It should be that if you divorce her, you have to remarry her. And that's why you don't get lashes, because it's a lafa nitik la'ase. That remedies the situation. And the Gemara responds, Vakati onus Motsi Shemra lo kama. But hold on, you can't learn one from the other. You could say that logical inference, you could break that kal v'chomer. Mala Motsi Shemra sheken lo k'mashalem. Motsi Shemra is worse, because clearly on the books there's a harsher punishment. So if it says you have to marry her in the case of Motsi Shemra, I wouldn't know that you have to do that. And onus has to say, in both cases, we're back to square one, where Rabbi Yochanan has a tension between the case of entering the Bet Mikdash and the case of onus, where they seem to be the same situation, and you get lashes in one, with the Bet Migdash, and not with Ones. So he's not sure what to do about Lav Shekad Mu'aseh. Attempt number two to say, you do get lashes if it's Lav Shekad Mu'aseh, and Ones is an exception. We try to say it's an exception based on the Pasuk. We said that Pasuk doesn't work. So we're going to try another avenue. Ela Yoma Lo Lo Tele Yisha B'Mosi Shemra. If you're telling me Mosi Shemra is worse, then let's try it the other way. Just don't say that you have to marry in the case of Motzi Shemra. Look, Ma Onus, if we learn it from Onus. Ma Onus, She'enu Laka Mishal, Ma Rachman Lo Shele Isha. Just as in the case of if you rape somebody, we're told you have to marry her. Even though you don't have to pay that much money, you don't get lashes for the initial crime. Motzi Shemra Lakol Shekei. So obviously in the case of Motzi Shemra, where you get lashes and whipped, you have to marry her too. Lama Nema, why does it say it in the case of Motzi Shemra, Imin Inin Motzi Shemra to know Inin Onus. It's spare, and it doesn't apply to the case of Motzi Shemra, so it must be there to teach you something about the case of Onus. Imin Inin Atanu Lafanav, Ina Acharav, and it doesn't apply beforehand because you're already told to marry it, it must apply to afterwards. So there we've solved the issue. Onus is different, and that's why you don't get lashes. Remarrying is remedial. It remedies it. Motzi Shemra, Me'onus Lamin Nagama. The Gemara responds, this is the second last green line. But the Gemara says you can't learn Motzi Shemra from Onus either. In some ways, Motzi Shemra is worse than Onus, the punishment's worse. But there are other ways, where you could break this inference in the other direction as well. In the case of rape, you have done something physical to her. You're right, the punishment on the book isn't worse, but the act is worse. And this, again, is a very important implicit observation here about Jewish punishment, is that you're right, the punishment on the book is worse for Motzi Shemra. That doesn't mean it's, by definition, a worse crime. It's quite possible that rape is worse. You did a miser, and the Torah doesn't find a way to punish that because it's too heinous, or because these punishments have nothing to do with the heinousness of the crime. There is an assumption here that not all punishments, not all crimes are punished, which is, of course, true in American law all the time. What do politicians always say if they're caught lying to the press? It's not a crime to lie to the press. Which is true. It is not a crime to lie. It's only a crime to lie under oath. And that's when you can get caught on perjury and all sorts of things. But you can lie as much as you want in public. Does that mean it's not heinous? Does that mean you can just get... Meaning the fellow from a neighboring county. I think it's just like a couple of blocks over. George Santos, just a couple of blocks over. Is it a... Meaning, let's say the financial accusations, everything else. We know for a fact at this point, he has confessed to having lied to all the constituents about his identity and going to college and all those things. Is that a crime? If that was the only thing that ended up being the case, that he lied? No. I mean, he's having an ethics committee investigation, who knows what that'll do, but that's not a crime to lie to the public. We may feel very uncomfortable, which it may be incredibly heinous to get a position through lying, but that doesn't mean, just because there's no punishment on the books, doesn't mean it's innocent. And that's what the Gemara is claiming here, that Ones, you're right, might not get lashes for the initial crime, but that doesn't mean it's not worse than Motzi Shemra. You've done something horrific that may not get punished. Either way, green and blue, we've now established, we can't really find why Ones might be an exception. And the fact that you're not getting lashed when you have to remarry her is a big problem for Rabbi Yochanan, who says you get lashed if you enter the temple while you're impure, because you have to leave. That should remedy the situation. Why are you getting lashes there? Attempt number three. Ela Yomalam Tili Shabba Motzi Shemra. Maybe it's not that there's an extra verse, but maybe the formulation of the verse is an indication of something new. In the case of Motzi Shemra, remember the case. You're engaged, you get married, the engagement's over, you get married, and then you accuse her of something. Are you married at that point?
No.
Well, it's one of those two. Yes, you're married at that point. Motzi Shemra, I'm accusing my wife of having committed adultery while we were engaged. You're married. So the fact that the verse says, V'lo tia l'isha, and she will be for you as a wife, is a strange turn of phrase, because you are already married. So the Gemara is going to say, oh, the formulation seems to indicate that this is not just, oh, you should stay married. It should say, don't divorce her. Why does it say, and she shall be for your wife? It must be implying that as a result, if you ever divorce her, you have to remarry her. That's going to be the assumption. Lo yaman lo tilesha b'motzi shemra. It shouldn't say, she shall be for you as a wife in the future tense, tiyeh, in the case of motzi shemra. Shari yishtohi, she's already your wife. Lama nema, why does it say it like that? It may not inyan l'motzi shemra, if it's not about motzi shemra because you're already married. It's not inyan l'ones. You can teach it to the ones case, which is similar. V'min inyan l'fanav, and if it's not for the initial crime, because we know you have to marry her after the initial crime, the pasuk says that. To know inyan l'achav, it must be If you divorce her, then you need to remarry her. But you could say, maybe you should say, hold on a minute, you do need it in the case of Motzi Shemra. In the case you divorce her, you have to remarry her, and you don't get Malkus in that situation. In Achinam, which says, yeah, that's true. It is a lava nitak la'asei in the case of Motzi Shemra, which is why you don't get lashes if you divorce her, because it says, and you should marry her, which we say is remedial. Vati onus for gamma mine, so the Gemara says, well, fine, just learn them both from each other. They're both very similar. Learn them both from each other. And what's the Gemara going to say? We've just said you can't learn either from each other. They are have their own stringency. But my gamma mine, how are you going to learn it? If you're going to say, oh, the psukim are very similar, or you're going to say, logically, you should learn from the other, you can break it as we broke them apart. Malamasi shemra, shekein la'asa maaseh. You cannot adjudicate these cases by comparison. So again, the opening assumption is you've done something to her life about the future, and these cases are pretty similar. And the Gemara's bottom line is they're radically different. When you have physically done an act to a young woman, even if it's not punished in the same way, it can be far worse, and the punishment being worse is an indication you can't compare punishments either. So again, what emerges out of these three cases, and we're going to get to how we resolve the issue in a second, is punishment, again, is not always an indication of what you deserve. It is trying to remedy a situation, not to repay justice for what's happened. You've done something horrific to this young woman, you did a miser, and you don't get punished as much because we can't always give you the response to what you've done on earth. You will find justice for that in some realm. We're just trying to rehabilitate society. And that's how we're going to adjudicate punishment going forward. So we return to our opening question, which we're now going to resolve, which is why is Ones different to Habala Mikdash Tameh? Again, to make it clear. You walk into the temple, you're impure. You're not meant to be there. You're already told, stay outside the camp. You went in. What do you have to do? You have to go back to your seat. And what do you get? Close? Malkus. One of the two. You get whipped. How do I know? Because that's the case in our Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Elo and who gets whipped? Habala Mikdash Tameh. You go into the Mikdash Tameh, you get whipped. And this is what led to this whole discussion, which is, hold on, why do you get whipped? You're told to leave. There is an assay that follows on, that, you know, come back to your seat. And the one's now saying, yeah, come back to your seat. It's not the same as sit in the corner. You're just restoring what should have been the case. So you get lashes. And we said, okay, I buy that logic. Ones was the problem. Because Ones, you're meant to be married. Don't get divorced. You got divorced and say, come back. Marry her again. Now you're back in your seat. What should you get? Lashes. Because you're just restoring order. But you don't get lashes. So why is that? That's the problem. If Lav Shekadmo Asei, if restoring a previous situation should come with lashes, why in Ones don't you get lashes? That's the question. And now we're going to resolve it here at the bottom with Rava. Ela Amar Rava, this is the second wide line. Kol Yamav, the end of the pasuk on the right in Bet, says, Lo yuchal shalcha kol yamav, you can never, ever, ever, ever send her away. Those last two words teach you that if you divorce her, you have a proactive remedy to marry her. And that will remedy the situation. This is a standing order. This isn't just restoring order. This is remedying your disobedience. There is an assumption that you being married to her is not just come back to your seat, but there's something about you being in your seat that makes you a better human being, and I'm saying come back to your seat and you will be rehabilitated, which may not work in a classroom setting, but seems to in the marriage setting. So Rava says, Kol Yamav ba'amad v'hachzer, the fact that it says Kol Yamav means that this is a standing order. You should always be married and remarry her. V'chein kiyata rav Ravina Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says the same thing. Rabbi Yochanan is the figure we're talking about, of course, from the top of the page. Kol Yama Brahma V'chazer. So we've resolved the issue. Full stop. That's the fourth and final resolution to this quandary, where we said in our Mishnah, Habala Mikdash Tameh, if you go in Tameh, you get lashes, even though you can come out. And that's what you have to do. We say, even though you're coming out, that doesn't absolve you from punishment. Ones, even though you're remarrying, you are absolved from punishment. Why is that different? And our assumption, bottom line, is because there is a standing obligation to remarry if you divorce her. And in each case, that remedies the situation. Not just restoring order, but you're remedying it. And again, the other kind of undercurrent theme is all malchus are about rehabilitation. It's not just you disobeyed, because if you divorced her, you disobeyed. You should get lashes. And we're saying, no, actually, remarrying her is a form of rehabilitation, so you don't get lashes. All punishment emerging from malchus of rehabilitation. Amalei Rav Papa Rava. Excuse me. There's going to be one final attempt to say even this fourth resolution should not work, because there is, bless you, another assumption about which crimes you get malchus for. Rav Papa says, Vaha, first word in the line is Dami. Halo Dami lave lelav de chasima. There is a prohibition, lo tachsom, which you shall not muzzle your ox. When shall you not muzzle your ox? When it's plowing or threshing, when it's in the field. Why shouldn't you muzzle the ox? Yeah, all the above. Meaning it's not entirely clear exactly why. The assumption of most of the commentators is because you're forcing it to work for you, to schlep up and down in the field, and you shouldn't stop it from eating while it's doing that. But that's the prohibition. While it's threshing, you can't muzzle it to stop it eating. And that is kind of seen as the classic case of prohibition, because it's right next to where the Gemara, where the Torah talks about lashes. It talks about lashes and it says, and lo tachzom. So the assumption is only in cases that are light, lo tachzom, you get lashes. Lo tachzom involves a maaseh. You muzzle it. Lo tachzom has no remedy. It's not like, and if you do it, do this. You've already committed the crime. So that's the standard case. And now we're saying, well, hold on a minute. Lav shekad mawaseh is not the same as lo tachzom. So Habala Mikdash Tami, it says go into the Beit Mikdash. If you go in, you have to leave because that's where you're meant to be, and you get lashes anyway. That's not the same as Lav Dechasima, or Lo Tachzom is what it's going to say. It's not La Dao Yudam Dechasima, so you shouldn't get Malkus. Amalei Rava responds and says, leave me alone, stop trying to break this. This is our resolution. Mishum Dekadav Be Rachmana Asa Yetera Migra Gara. It's like Lav Dechasima in the sense that there's a prohibition, and it adds an extra prohibition in the sense that it says, and you have to do this beforehand. That should mean that you don't get lashes because it's more strict. Doesn't make any sense. Ihachi, lav nenagase nami. The Gemara says, hold on a second then. If that's true, alav shenig la'ase, you should also get lashes. Lema mishim dekara b'rachman ase, yiter migwa gara, you're going to stick on extra ase. It's even more strict. And on that basis, you're not going to get whipped. Logically, that doesn't work. Amalei, the Gemara responds, hulan tuke lavu da'ata. No, that second, in the case of Lav Nitak La'aseh, that's not like, oh, this is even worse, which is why there's a extra proactive behavior. That's to remedy and rehabilitate the situation. So if I tell you, if you steal something, you have to give it back, giving it back is not a punishment. Giving it back is remedying, rehabilitating. It's not worse, you're solving the issue. Full stop. Now, this is going to be a strange observation. In the case of halav shenitak la'aseh, give me a classic example. You've done something wrong and you can remedy the situation and you no longer have to get punished. I mean, we can use our case of ones, which is not a pleasant case to use. Somebody raped this woman. They got married. He is prohibited from divorcing her. They got divorced. What did we say he has to do as a result? Remarry. And if he remarries, he doesn't get malchus. What happens if he says, I don't want to remarry her? Or keeps delaying. Just keeps delaying. Do we say, well, you've got about 10 minutes and then I'm just going to whip you? Like, lahavdil. Is this like when I say to my kids, tidy up right now? And they say, no. Say, okay, I'm counting to 10. And then if you don't, there'll be a punishment or there'll be consequences. Or is it like, whenever you tidy up, that's when it's resolved? Or am I allowed to say there's a limit on this before punishment kicks in? So somebody says, I don't want to remarry her. I refuse to remarry her. Say, well, you've got to remarry her. If you don't, we'll whip you. And you'll say, it's a lava nizik la'aseh. There's no malchus here. There's only malchus if I can no longer remedy the situation. If she dies, let's say. So I can't remarry her now. So now I've committed a crime that there's no aseh to rehabilitate me. So that's a debate. Or well, if he dies, whipping him is less effective. It's a good threat. Right. There used to be a good threat in the medieval period that we'll do stuff to you after you're dead. I think I mentioned once before Oliver Cromwell, who rebelled against Charles I and had him beheaded. After he died, he was disinterred and his head was put on a pike and he was executed. He was like decapitated. which is an odd response after somebody's dead, but I guess it works as a threat. So there is a debate between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish about if you have committed this crime, you've divorced this woman, and you say, I don't want to remarry her. Can the Beis Din say, you've got 3 days to get the wedding hall booked and remarry her, and then we're going to whip you? And you can't tell me to love Lanidik La'asei, because all love Lanidik La'asei is you've committed a crime and you've got a way out. And your way out is doing this quick act to remedy the situation. But you deserve lashes right now, and the Torah gives you a dispensation. Or do we say, actually, love Lanidik La'asei means the crime is not committed until the remedy is impossible, until she's dead, or let's say you take an oath, a legal binding oath, I will never marry her. So it's now impossible without you committing a crime. So you've now made it impossible, we can lash you. But as long as the possibility of rehabilitation exists, can you say the crime hasn't been fully committed? That's going to be a question of debate. And at the bottom of the page,
she's not interested.
If she's not interested, I guess you can hold out hope. Or if she's not interested, you don't have the obligation. We'd say, it's not on me. We could talk at length about that. But she says, no, thank you. Your obligation is satisfied. You have to offer to remarry her, let's say. You have to offer to marry her in the first place. Yes?
Still divorced, inappropriate.
And he has to now be willing to remarry her. But she can say no. So again, that tells you about what the obligation is about. It's not about formally signing a piece of paper. It's formally giving her an option about her future. And if she says, I'm fine, you've done your piece. It seems. So, the resolution Rava just proposed was that you have an obligation for the rest of your life to remarry her, and that's how we know it's a lava nitik la'asei. And the Gemara is going to say, hold on a minute, that you can marry the rest of your life? That obviously would only work if you take the view that lava nitik la'asei is a lifelong possibility, and not like a 5-minute warning from the Beis Din. This is how it puts it. Hanich laman dama bitlov lo bitlov. That's only if somebody takes a view that halav nitik la'asei is an issue of whether you nullify and it becomes impossible to do or not. But if it's a view that says the Beis Din can warn you and then whip you, Michael Amema, what are you going to say? You don't have the option to do it for the rest of your life. And the Gemara is now going to say something very technical about this. Midi Avatama, what are you talking about? Ela Rabbi Yochanan. We're all talking about Rabbi Yochanan. That's how this all started. Rabbi Yochanan said, Lav shekad mo'ase, you get whipped. We say, did you say that, Rabbi Yochanan? He said, nope, not me. We said, hold on, yes, you did. It's in our Mishnah. You said it. And he said, fine, I did say it, but I had an issue with Ones. And we said, Ones is an exception because of this. No, because of this. No, because of this. No, because of this. Yes, it's an exception because of that. So, that exception only works because Kol Yamav, if you assume that you've got your whole life to fulfill it, at which point the woman would say, yeah, Rabbi Yochanan has that view. And this is where we are now. Ha'amalei Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is the one who had the view. You've got the rest of your life to fulfill it. Latana Tane, because he's the one who told the teacher to teach. Bit lo chayev, lo bit lo pata. Full stop. And now we can do these four blue lines and then wrap up. Which is, the Tane, Tana Kame Rabbi Yochanan. They taught this teaching before Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan says, what you're about to teach me is incoherent. Because it uses two different verbs, which are mutually exclusive. And there is a big gap in what's about to be taught. It says, kol mitzvot. This is, a summary of the concept we've been talking about. First one line is mitzvot. Fourth line. Kol mitzvot lo ta'aseh, sheyesh ba'kum aseh. Any negative crime which has a way to remedy it. For example, do not divorce this woman. And then we say, if you do, you need to marry her. So that as an example. Kiyam aseh shabah. If you do the positive obligation, meaning in our case, you remarry her, pater, you are exempt. Bitul ase shabah, but if you make that impossible, how would you make that impossible?
He's declaring that he's not going to do it or she
dies. Or making an oath, let's say. Declaring doesn't make it impossible. Making an oath, we're making it impossible legally, or she dies. Chayev yochayev. And what Rabbi Yochanan is about to say is there's a big gap between those two cases. It says, if you fulfill it, you're exempt. And if you make it impossible, you're liable. But you can also say, I'm not going to fulfill it, but I'm not going to make it impossible. Let's say he just says, I'm not going to do it, I'm not going to do it, I'm not going to do it. It's not an oath. He just keeps delaying. What happens there? Because it's not covered by either of these cases. We say you're only patur if you fulfill it, and you're only chayiv if you make it impossible. So one second, let's just finish the line. Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan responds, Maika Amras, what are you talking about? Kiim patur lo kiim chayiv. Bittul chayiv lo bittul patur. You have to keep the same verb to cover these cases in the middle case. So he says, Tani, you should teach it bitlo velo bitlo. You have to say, if you made it impossible, you're chayiv. If you didn't make it impossible, you're exempt. So as long as it's still possible, you can keep delaying and delaying and delaying and delaying, and you won't get lashes until it becomes impossible to remarry her. That's the assumption. And the Gemara finishes this by saying, Rav Shimon ben Lakish, I'm a kaim v'lo kaimu. And Rav Shimon is the one who disagrees and says it's all about whether you fulfill it or not. So again, according to Reish Lakish, and this is not the view we follow, Reish Lakish has a view, you've divorced her. You need to remarry her. The Beis Din can turn around and say, you've got 10 days to remarry her. And if you don't, even though in theory you could remarry her in 3 weeks from now, that's not our business. You've committed a crime, and you've got a 10-day window to avoid lashes by marrying her right now. But if you refuse, we're going to whip you, and you can't come back in 3 weeks and say, I remarried her now, and now I'd seek compensation for all the whipping that you did that was improper. The whipping is perfectly proper. You committed a crime. Lavanitik Lase is just the opportunity for you to avoid lashes by remedying it very quickly. But we can warn you and stop you. That's what Reish Lakish has. And we're going to tie this to a situation next week, which will be relatively complicated as well, which is if I say to my kids, and this is, I guess, psychologically makes sense, and I do this a lot, which is not helpful. But I say to my kids, eat your food right now, or maybe you won't get dessert. What do my kids think?
I'll roll the dice.
Right, say again.
I'll take my chances.
Right, so draw us a more obedient child in this situation. And Jay says, did you say maybe I won't get dessert? It's like, there's still an opening. I'll take my chances. And my kids do this. They listen very carefully. And if they know I'm hedging. If I say maybe, they know it's because I don't want to like not give them dessert. Otherwise, I would just say, you won't get dessert. I say, maybe you won't. They'll come back later and say, Daddy, you only said maybe. So what do you think now? And at that point, you're stuck. So the question is going to be, if you have to have a hasra to get markers. You have to be warned. What if you get a kind of a maybe warning? Say, if you do this, you might get malchus. Is that enough of a warning psychologically to say that you were fully committed to this crime knowing the results? Or are we going to be like, what do you think? Maybe, but maybe not. Or we say, no, that warning, you knew that it was a possibility. And the assumption is going to be that question hinges on the debate we just raised between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. Because according to Rabbi Yochanan, it is always a maybe when you get warned. You get warned, if you commit this crime, you might get malchus. You might not, because you could always remedy it at some point in your life. Reish Lakish says, no, you always deserve malchus. There will be a way out in theory, but you always, it's a certain that you will get malchus and you have a way out. And Rabbi Yochanan is going to be very comfortable with a hasra safek, saying you might get malchus as being enough of a warning. And we'll get to that next week. In the meantime, at some point, we will transition to some more practical questions, not contemporary, but practical. How do lashes work? What does a whip look like? How do you have to stand? What would be recited as it was happening? Would the audience be there? Who would there be an exemption you wouldn't whip, etc., etc.? And these will become a little less conceptually thorny. But again, the bottom line that seems to emerge, and I don't want to harp on this, seems to be lashes is rehabilitative. There are ways that it is not applied. And that is a theme that keeps emerging. When do we not whip? It's going to be, we don't if there's a way out. We don't if it was no act involved. We're going to have all sorts of reasons when it isn't. But it is applied in cases where there is no alternative rehabilitation, which includes the case of Lav Shekad Mu'ase, which is just about come back to your seat. You still deserve some punishment. Now, we'll leave it there, and we'll pick up next week from the green. In the meantime, I wish you all a good week. Thing you do benching, right?
Okay.